You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
And now that heart is beating fast, and that's the rhythm I can dance to. I'm mighty glad I've got a chance to, that one big heart that's beating fast. Tomorrow morning, let it rain. Tomorrow morning, let it pour. Tonight, we're in the groove together. Ain't gonna worry about stormy weather. Gonna kick old trouble out the door. Beat out old trouble and drunk. Trouble on the drum, beat out old trouble on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Beat me that rhythm on the drum, beat me that rhythm on the drum, beat me that rhythm on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Kick him out the door, kick him out the door, kick him out the door, kick him out the
Welcome to Radical Australian Community Radio 3CR, streaming live on 3cr.org.au. This program is podcast. Henrietta still refuses to speak. She's ashamed to be the producer of Radical Australia, but it's all right. She does all the podcasts. She takes the photographs. She does all the work. She's extraordinary. I'm just a show pony. I just sit here and ask questions of the guests. Now, we don't normally bring guests back because they normally die in the interim, but we have here somebody I spoke to about 9 years ago, a 3CR ornament, Beth Matthews. Well, are you going to leave?
Why are you calling me an ornament, Joe?
Well, it's the 3CR Christmas tree. You've been here long enough.
I've been here long enough.
How long have you been here at 3CR?
I've done radical philosophy for the last 11 years, and prior to that I had to do my apprenticeship. I was on Monday Breakfast for a good 2 years.
You used to come here early and do Monday Breakfast.
I had to. It was pretty bad because I'm not a morning person.
I know you're not a morning person. So, every time I've rung you in the morning, you've been asleep.
Or not compus mentis.
Exactly.
No, I'd get in here
and
at
listen,
6.
It's not because of alcohol, all right?
No, it's not.
No.
I get in here at 6 o'clock and I'd read the papers.
You used to live in the eastern suburbs, miles away, didn't
no,
you?
No, I still do. I haven't moved much. I'm still in the nice, leafy, middle-class eastern suburbs.
Well, it'd be nice to meet your One Nation representative after the next state election. Aren't you that type of mob down there?
Yeah, that's embarrassing. But so I used to, I'd be in here for an hour reading the newspapers and then I'd be live on air and I'd say, good morning and welcome to the Monday Breakfast program. And I'd just wake up.
Were you the only one?
No, I actually had Peter. He was...
Which Peter?
Margaret and Peter.
All right. Yeah.
And he was in here for a while, but there was actually Valerie and Sue Lee.
All right.
That actually Valerie was leaving, and Sue was a friend of mine, so she invited me on here, and I didn't know what I was getting myself into.
It's 6 a.m. You were here at 6 a.m. You'd get up at 4 to get here, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I did just about. Well, there wasn't much traffic on the road at that stage, so that was a good thing. Mm. But it was dedication. I mean, that's sort of your apprenticeship because, with the breakfast program, you've got to do everything and run from one studio to another, putting the calls through, and had a couple of funny incidents. I thought I was very clever because
Excuse me, Beth.
No, I am very clever.
Exactly. You haven't changed.
I am very clever.
You do think you're clever.
But just with the technique because when the calls were put through, sometimes they wouldn't go through. And we'd say, good morning, good morning, good morning, and they wouldn't be there. So I thought, look, I'll put the call through early.
Yeah.
So I did that once, clicked it through, but I actually forgot to tell the woman, you're sort of live on air for the next 20 seconds. And she went and started clearing her throat and doing guttural coughs. And all that theory didn't go down too good.
No. Let's ask some real questions.
Yep.
When were you born? What year?
Oh, I don't know if a woman gives away
Well, what
her...
decade?
What decade? No, I was actually born in 1963 in Crown Street Hospital. I was a Crown Street baby.
That's Sydney.
In Sydney. I'm from Sydney originally.
Can you leave the studio, please?
You didn't know that.
I didn't know that. I've learned
all this
something.
All this time. No, I lived in Brisbane till I was about...
Brisbane or Sydney?
No, I lived in Brisbane for 18 months, but I grew up in Sydney and I left Sydney when I was about 19 and went to Brisbane for 2 years. Thing was, Sydney was too busy. I went to Brisbane and it was too quiet. So then I came to Melbourne and it was just perfect.
Just right, yeah. So you read the story about the three bears and the porridge, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
You know the scientific analysis regarding Earth and the three bears?
No.
Well, you know, the first pot of porridge was too hot. Mm-hmm. The other one was too cold and the third one was just right. And that's what scientists say, Earth is just right for life and the rest of the universe is too hot or too cold. And you think, oh, my God, what intellectuals. Now, Beth, mm-hmm. are you an only child?
Yes and no.
What? Well, you don't know your siblings.
But you didn't expect that answer,
No, you don't
did
know
you?
Your siblings.
No, well, my mother actually had my three brothers with a guy.
Yep.
And then
a guy.
And then she let him go. Yeah. And then it was a good 10 years later that she met another guy and she had me. So we all grew up in the same house. They were my brothers.
Yep.
But I suppose genetically they're my half-brothers and they were 10, 12 and 15 years older than me.
Right.
So I was sort of almost like a different generation. I was much younger. Uh-huh. I was sort of did my own thing. I mean, you know, they were around, but it was that generation sort of gap.
Yeah. And what, are your parents still with us?
No, they've gone quite a while ago because they were sort of older parents.
Right. You were just an accident then.
Oh, no, I was very much wanted.
Very
yes.
much wanted.
But I was a honeymoon baby.
A
if honeymoon. You want a bit of dirt on me.
All right, yeah.
My mother kept straight. Oh, a honeymoon baby.
Baby, so they did. Well, she'd had practice beforehand, hadn't she? This was a second marriage.
That's right, yeah. So I'd say it was a bit of a shotgun wedding at the registry office.
Right.
But I just made it.
You just made it. In the 9 months, you just made it.
Yeah.
Right. What was life like for a young person in Sydney in those days?
Look, it was great.
Great.
I had a lot of fun. I'd play every day. I'd be out in the street playing with my friends. All the kids in the street would play together.
Okay.
I mean, you know, we enjoyed the simple things in life, like my brother would make me a slingshot. And I think things like that. I mean, we didn't have very much, but... No. You know, just playing in the yard and playing with my friends. And but I used to love TV shows. My favourite were Gilligan's Island and Lost in Space.
And
space travel was such a big thing when I was young.
Those days, yeah.
It was just enormous. Everybody's talking about it. But look, I'll answer the question before you've asked it. What was my earliest memory?
Excuse me. Who's conducting the interview? I told you, Henrietta, I told you this person would come in, she'd take over, she's a megalomaniac, and when you have two megalomaniacs in the studio, you are going to get sparks.
Oh, hang on, there's Henrietta. She said, boom, I've got her to speak.
No, Joe. She has made noises before.
Made noises? Oh, okay.
Like your guttural clearing guest. All right. Well, what's your earliest memory, Beth?
Right. Well, one of my earliest memories was, and I hadn't realised I was so young, but I was only 2 years and 8 months, and my grandmother came over to visit, and she'd come over and she'd always hug me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she came over this day, and I ran away from her because she smelt musty. You might be laughing in a minute. Anyway, the next thing, I'm sitting there watching TV and I heard screaming. I thought I wasn't much, you know, there's often a bit of screaming in my house and didn't think anything of it. Next thing, my brother's in there sort of blocking the doorway in case I made a run for it because my grandmother had actually walked down the hallway, bumped her leg and she had a blood clot and she died. And then my mother asked me, a couple of weeks later, she said, why didn't you hug Grandma? And I said, she smelt funny. She smelt musty. And my mother said, you smelt death on her.
Right. You're just like a Labrador. You're a human Labrador.
I've got a nose like
two
a dog.
2 years and 8 months. And you remember that?
I do, very, very clearly, yeah.
Look, what I really loved about the chat we had 9 years ago is when you fell down the stairs. Could you tell us about that?
Oh, that's right, yeah. My mother didn't realise I could crawl and she was putting out the washing thinking, oh, you know, the baby, she can't crawl. So I crawled all the way up my neighbour's stairs and I was banging at her back door. And she looked out, and because I was so close to the back door, she couldn't see anything, you know, those half-panel doors. And she saw the banging, and she thought, oh, my God. So she ran around the front of her house and screamed out to my mother, you know, Elizabeth's at the door. No, I was at the door knocking, like, help me, take me away from this crazy family from a very early age. I thought, you know, let me out of here.
You didn't fall down the stairs then?
No, I didn't.
You never did. What? So you embellished the story 9 years ago.
No, you didn't remember it properly, Joe.
Are you suggesting I've got early dementia? You could be right, you know.
Yeah, I know. I think so. Well, yeah. It was a long time for you.
It's like that musty smell. You know. You know.
I can smell death. I'm like a bloodhound.
Is Henrietta musty?
No. No, she's not. But if she stays here much longer, she might be.
So how did you go at school? Primary school initially.
Ah, awful. I'm dyslexic. And right. Having such a long name, everybody had their names on name tags, you know, a piece of cardboard. Mm. And it was so difficult because, you know, I had such a lengthy name. I was still using my name card after everybody else had sort of finished with it. But, I looked at it in a philosophical sense school. You know, I could barely read or write, but I thought, look, hey, I'm here to socialise and party. Right. So it was quite fun.
In primary school?
Yeah, in primary school.
You went to all the birthday parties.
I did. Yeah. So, no, I got along quite well and I think, you know, I could I'll tell you what else you actually learn when you go to school. You learn social norms, which I didn't learn at home. Because we had some pretty funny social norms at home. So, but when you get out and you mix with other people and you speak to the other kids and you realise what's going on and how nice and quiet and civilised their households are, you think, oh, okay, I'm sort of in a bit of a different household. So you actually learn a lot and I'm very much against people homeschooling their children for that reason. And I think, you know, I would have been a basket case if I had been kept at home. No. So I think, look, you've got to live in the world and you've got to let your kids get out into the world and socialise and, you know, they just...
What made you think you were dyslexic?
Well, because I couldn't read.
No, but did you think you had an issue or did anybody think you had issues in those days?
Yeah, well, what they did was they gave a couple of IQ tests out and... And there was one girl, Sonia. Sonia, very fancy.
Sonia.
Very fancy name. They called her out and then they called me out and then I was sort of waiting for all the rest of the kids to be called out and they didn't. Mm. Oh, that was pretty awful because they called my parents up to the school and said she's got a very high IQ but she doesn't do well at school, she's lazy.
Right. So, yeah.
And then my parents thought if they were really mean to me, I wouldn't be lazy anymore.
It sounded life-changing, oh. They got you to do all the chores, didn't they? Wash the dishes, comb the groom the dog.
Well, it sort of made me think about things a lot and it made me think about the connections I had with my, you know, family and how there's a big world out there and there's lots of people out there And I think a lot of people just stay in their own family unit and don't sort of venture out much. But I think because of that, it sort of prompted me to do that. And thank heavens I'm an extrovert, if you haven't noticed, Joe.
You're an extrovert. I never noticed, Beth. I never noticed. I just thought you were nervous. That was a nervous laugh.
Oh, yeah. No, so I think I always looked at life in a very philosophical manner. And I think I'm, you know, sometimes I'm only a glass half full. But most of the time, what's the saying? Glass half empty. You know, yeah, but I'm mainly.
Glass half empty or half full.
Yeah, whatever. I'm mainly a glass half full sort of person.
So you haven't got existential angst then? If it's a glass half full.
No, that's right. And I actually just looked up my star signs that are...
From
the 70s. They're coming back into vogue, you know.
What star signs? You're an educated person. You're talking to me about star signs. What's wrong with you?
Well, I'm Cancer and...
Okay, now you haven't, have you got cancer?
No. I'll let you know when I do. Right. You can do some surgery on me.
Look, these days I just do the last rites.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, that's handy. Even better.
Yeah.
But I actually did my rising sign, and it actually described me, my personality, as being jovial. And I thought, well, they got that one right.
You are jovial, yeah. And how did you breathe through high school?
Yeah, I did. Oh, my father had left by then, so he wasn't. I only had one to be mean to me, and she was out most of the time.
Your poor mum was left with three sons and you.
They were older. Oh, right. They were older, they sort of had left home.
Right.
But my father actually, my mother and father broke up when I was seven.
Mm.
And
did that have any impact on you?
Well, it did in a strange way because. My mother owned her own home and my father actually took out mortgages or loans against the home. So when they broke up, she had to sell the home and we didn't have enough money really to...
So he left her with an STD.
Yes, exactly.
Sexually transmitted debt,
exactly.
Which is a huge problem even today.
It is. Well, people really didn't think about it back then, you know. No. But so that's what happened. But she did come up with an idea with my three brothers and myself of buying an apartment. And back in those days, you could actually move into the apartment, whatever property you're buying, for 6 weeks before settlement.
Right.
So we moved in. And, of course, well, what do you do when you move to a new house? You have a housewarming party. But never living in an apartment. But before we didn't realise, you know, I turned up the music, hey! And the neighbours are complaining. Yeah. And then I got up early in the morning and I had a friend stay over and I was playing marbles on the kitchen floor and the people down below were knocking on the door like, what the hell? So we left and
the
real estate agent said, but you committed to buy the property. And he said, you've signed the contract. My mother said, well, tear it up. We're off. We're not living in an apartment. So after that it was one rental house after another and that made me feel quite insecure.
Right. So when you left high school, what did you do?
Before I left high school, I joined the Army Reserve.
Right.
And I went into the Army and I was in there for a couple of years.
In the Reserve or the real Army?
No. Well, they're both real.
Yes, they can both be called up. Yep.
I was in the SAS Saturdays and Sundays.
Yeah, I'm thinking you must have been fit in those days in comparison to today.
Yeah, I was.
In the SAS.
Yes, I was actually. Yeah, I was very fit. Yeah. Get up and run 5 kilometres before breakfast when you're in the Army. So, yeah, so I did that for a couple of years and then I sort of moved on and, did other bits of work here and there. And, so there was sort of like work, look, you know, not being very literate, I went through and I did get my VCE.
Right.
But I didn't get very high marks and I thought I'm going to do it again, but I've basically got to, after I've left school, teach myself how to read and write. So that was quite difficult and it probably took me probably a decade to actually do that, to have myself up to a certain level and then moving to Melbourne, I was very, very determined.
But why did you move to Melbourne? You're living in Brisbane. You know, the sunshine, the boring people.
Yes, exactly.
God's waiting room in Surfers Paradise.
I hightailed it out of there and came to Melbourne. Yeah. Look, Melbourne's just full of so much culture. I felt like I was at home
in Melbourne. So what year did you get to Melbourne?
I was 21 when I came to Melbourne.
And you were born in what year again?
63.
So 21. Yeah, that would be a good time, 84.
Yep. So it was a pretty good place. I started making friends. I thought, this is, you know, my goal. I go to groups, make friends, and get, like, community around me. So I did that. Then a few years later, I did my VCE here, and I was really just so determined to get a degree because I had been told many times at school I would never get a degree.
Great, right.
Mm-hmm. And so I was so determined. But originally I wanted to go in and study science and I wanted to be a geneticist.
Ooh.
But then over the years things changed and I sort of leant more towards philosophy.
Philosophy?
Philosophy. So I have a philosophy degree.
Yeah, but there's no money in philosophy.
I know. I'm a member of the Unemployed Philosophers Guild.
The biggest guild amongst philosophers. So... where did you get your degree?
From UTAS, the University of Tasmania. So they had an open door policy for mature age students.
Right.
And I think for myself and a lot of other dyslexic people, you tend to do a lot better when you can study a very narrow field that you're just absolutely obsessed with and think about it 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I actually did really well. And in my philosophy subjects, I got a credit average, and which, you know, I thought was quite amazing.
Can I ask you a question?
Oh, yeah, you've asked me several. Another one?
No, yes, there's another one. Can you describe what is philosophy?
It's the love of wisdom and the study of knowledge. And there's different...
In other words, it's not a 21st century concept.
No.
These days it's all about the vibe.
Yeah, well, it goes back to the ancient Greeks, Socrates, Aristotle.
The love of...
And Hypatia.
Hypatia, what's that?
It's quite a famous woman philosopher. There's not very many women in philosophy,
mm-hmm.
but there has been a few that have actually, and it's interesting, they've studied mathematics, but it's always like their father was a mathematician, so they were able to study. Whereas if you came from a family that, you know, wasn't a highly educated family, you'd have no hope. So, and it's like a lot of things that are coming out now with musicians and other fields that there's a bit of doubt whether who wrote the compositions because they were saying, you know, that's somebody's wife or somebody's sister.
Because they
just weren't, if you weren't a man, nothing was sort of recognised. And I think philosophy too is one discipline that hasn't sort of caught up with a lot of others because you see science and they're sort of almost even numbers. But there's still that bias. And I think the bias is because it is such an ancient... form of knowledge that it just sort of hasn't caught up.
Philosophy is knowledge? Please explain.
Well, it's...
You know, people talk about this philosopher, that train of thought, this, that. What's it all about?
Well, there's different fields of philosophy and, I mean, I'm very interested in morals and ethics.
Excuse me, that's... we don't do that in the 21st century. That's a 20th century concept. You've got to understand that. It's all about belief systems.
Well, there's belief systems as well.
Philosophy?
I'll throw a question at you because it's something I'm studying. I have been studying for over a decade and I'm still studying. I mean, that's the great thing about philosophy. I don't think you can ever know everything on a particular topic. And I think that I see that as a challenge. But it's one thing that I'd like to actually explore more is a sense of self and whether there is a permanent sense of self, because I've never been able to find any permanent sense of self within myself. Because when I look back at myself, like when I was that, you know, that child just under 3 years old, I had a totally different concept of life than I did, you know, a few years later when I started school. And even now, Dare say, not with your conversation, Joe, but when I have a conversation with quite intelligent people,
yeah, I understand.
I tend to change my views on certain things. So it's almost like I have another sense of self. So do you think there's anything in you that's sort of been a permanent sense of self?
I don't think. I think a sense of self is not predetermined. It's moulded. And what happens is that you change. Sometimes you don't even realise that purpose has changed. And I think that's part of being human, the fact that we are actually able to evolve internally and externally. I mean, we're not a constant fixture. So I'll send you a bill. I'll send you a bill for that.
Maybe I'll send you a bill.
You asked the question.
I'm looking for
you
a bit of work.
You asked the question. So, look, I know this sounds terrible, but what does a mature age student who's got a degree in philosophy from the University of Tasmania do?
Well, invest money in other things, obviously, because, you know, I'm not really getting paid. So, but the thing is,
Is a philosopher a little bit like being a volunteer at 3CR?
Yeah, that's where you end up.
Yeah.
You know, well, I was actually interviewing a philosophy professor on my program one day, and she said to me, "Do you get paid for this?" And I thought, I said, "No, I don't." I said, and then I said, "Look, it's very difficult to find any work within philosophy. I only have a degree." And then she laughed and said, "Yeah, well, I've got a PhD and I'm having trouble."
And you can do postdoctoral work and have trouble. Because nobody values philosophers.
No, they don't.
You're not valued. It's as if I've got this saying that history began in Australia, begins when you wake up in the morning. And I think it's the same with ethics, morals, that it's a movable feast and it depends on the cultural and political climate at that particular point in time. For example, look at all these people that are seriously considering voting for divided nation. And you know, and you think about how in a short period of time things can change dramatically when you've got momentum behind you. But it's interesting. Now, getting back, so what type of work did you do once you graduated if you couldn't get any philosophy work?
I basically didn't work because
Are you a bludger? I mean, didn't your parents beat into you by being mean that you had to work? Yeah, couldn't be lazy?
I did work. I had the most difficult job there is. I was actually have been a mother to a child with disabilities.
Right.
So I wasn't able to get out for any length of time in the
paid workforce. So how old were you when you had your child?
24.
24.
But look, I was speaking about having a child, I want to get back onto genetics.
Yes.
Because now this really just blew my mind. And I won't say the name of the company because I don't want to give them any free advertising, but there's lots of DNA tests. You know, you spit in a tube and send it off.
Yep.
Well, 2 days ago, I got my results back. And I didn't. Well, look, there was a bit of doubt, Joe, about my father being my father. I thought, you know, you never know, do you?
suspicious.
Being a honeymoon baby. And
I mean, they're dead. Leave them alone.
You should see Henrietta's face. My God.
Well, 10% of all births,
it's
a different father. That's quite 10 to 15%. That's the statistic.
It is.
What did you find?
Well, amazingly enough, I actually found out that my mother is my mother and my father is probably my father.
Right.
But when I paid an extra $10 for the traits. I thought, $10, you know, it's worth it. Yeah. See my traits.
Yeah.
And surprise, surprise, it came up that I was 100% extrovert.
Right.
And that I used to be very athletic, obviously, in my younger days.
Ooh.
So I thought, it was pretty good. I mean, they got a couple of things wrong.
You know what our essence is? Essence of the individual is based on three factors.
Mm-hmm.
Culture, upbringing, and the intermarriage of the DNA from the parents.
Yeah.
And it's those three things, I think, all have an equal bearing on how you developed. And it's all these studies on, you know, identical twins who've been separated at birth, and then they find them 30 years later, and it's just extraordinary, the similarities. Just
exactly. Yeah. No, it is. And I'm quite interested because I've actually got some photos of my great-grandmother, great-great-grandmother, and the photos of them, and I've looked and I've thought, I really want to get to know their stories and, you know, what they were all about, because the likeness is quite striking there. They're very striking looking like me.
Of course. they're women of substance. And I'm not talking about intellect. Yes, you are striking.
Yes, and it's one of my absolute fascinations over the years, and especially, as you said, with twins. Mm. I've always been fascinated by twins. Well, you would not believe my luck. 25 years ago, when I met my partner, who is a twin.
All right.
And I was like, oh, I've got my own twin after all these
years. Oh, a twin experiment. Dr. Mengel is with us.
Exactly. Well, I said to my partner, Lorraine, I said, oh, you know, do you look much like your brother? And she said, nah. Oh, my God. Well, when I saw him, it was like looking into her face. It was spooky.
Right.
And you know what I've discovered? Well, I have a theory.
Yes.
That Lorraine and her twin brother are half or semi-identical. Mm-hmm. And it's one of my fascinations as well. It's when the egg is whole and is then it splits, so you've got two identical eggs and they're fertilised by two different sperm. Mm. So they're carrying more DNA than just two siblings.
Mm. Now, getting back to your life, here you are, unemployed bludger with a philosophy degree, you know, having a great time in Melbourne. How did you survive?
Well, on my wits.
You don't want to mention.
Well, I tell you what really saved me. And I mean, I know a lot of people aren't that keen. I've been a property developer.
Right.
So I've always, because I wanted that security in property, so I've always sort of managed properties and done that sort of thing. I, you know, being a boomer, I snapped them up when it was cheap.
You're not a boomer. You're too young to be a boomer.
I am. I'm just in the boomer.
Just, yeah. Just. I mean, you know, I don't know if I accept you as one of us. I mean, you know, you've got the mentality of one of us. Keep it all for us.
I'm too young and pretty.
Don't give any. Now, talking about young and pretty, I mean, aren't you too old to have all these badges on your coat? What have we got here? What have we got here? What's going on?
Oh, it's all my travels. Well, what I've did. Worked hard all my life, as
Can we have the violin music, please, Henrietta? She worked hard all her life and now she's wasting it on cruises.
Well, I am. I am. I've decided my daughter's independent.
Right.
So I thought.
So you've done a very good job there. You said the daughter had disabilities.
Yes.
And so all that effort and energy was well worthwhile.
It paid off in
paid
the
off,
end.
Yeah. Because I remember I used to speak to you about her and you were always very concerned what was going to happen.
Well, I was. And, and all of a sudden it's like, you know.
Gone.
She changed her permanent self. A sense of self was not permanent. Mm. So she changed, turning on a dime. So now she's really independent, which I'm very proud of her. And then the last dog died.
The last dog?
The last dog died.
How many dogs did you have?
We had four.
Yes,
at once. I was poodle rescue in Victoria.
You were poodle rescue.
I was poodle rescue probably about, you know, almost 20 years ago. So I sort of collected a few. But then that was good. I mean, the dog went and I saw an opportunity.
Yep.
And I thought, okay, this is the first time basically in my life I've never had a pet. You know, the child's gone. I'm free. Mm. I have my freedom and I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I have. So, but there was one problem. My partner was still working.
Right.
So I said to Lorraine, I said, look, you know, I'm going to retire. I'm going to travel.
Yeah.
I'll see you later. Henrietta laughed. I'm making her make noises. She's loving it.
That's her dream.
Yeah. So anyway, I knew it wasn't going to be long, and she decided to retire as well.
Right. And so you put the hard word on her.
I put the hard word on her, and yeah. Didn't take long. So a couple of months later, we were off on our first cruise, and we haven't stopped. Because, look, a lot of people, when they're younger, they have this freedom and they go and travel, and I was never able to do that.
No.
And I thought,
you were a relatively young mother. You had a child with a major disability, and it's a full-time job.
Yeah, exactly, that's right. So now I'm just kicking my heels up, and I can't travel enough. It's just, you know, I've been travelling with Lorraine, and then she's had enough and she comes home, and then I've continued on. I've been to the Galapagos Islands.
Did you say hello to the turtles for us?
I did.
How big are they?
Oh, very big. Very big.
Bigger than you?
It's lucky I've got a hard shell, isn't it, Joe?
Now, I'm just trying to get a size. Now, I want to get back to this DNA business you did.
Yep.
Origin. Did they tell you where your family came from?
Yes.
What's your origin?
Pretty boring. England, Ireland, Scotland, and a dash of German blood. And that's
it.
That's about it. Yeah, pretty boring. Very boring.
Totally European.
Yeah, totally.
Totally.
But it was quite amazing how I gave them, well, I
bit of spit.
I gave them a fake name.
Yeah, a lot of people do that.
Yeah. I didn't want to, you know. Yeah. Anyway.
They didn't check.
Well, I didn't check. You can just open up another email address. And I got a friend to pay for it with her credit card, so they'll probably think it's her. So even though she's already done a test, so they'll think, she's got varied DNA. So so I did that. But it is amazing that from your spit, you know, I looked at the family tree and there's all my relatives.
That's right.
And I thought, whoa, this is really good. So
the double helix.
Sure. And it sort of makes you think about nature versus nurture, as you were saying about the twins. And there's definitely a lot in people's DNA.
There is.
That you can't fight it.
Nature's an extraordinary innovator. The fact that you get two strands of DNA and you mix them and you get something else. Just extraordinary when you think about it. It's not as if we self-replicate. We're not clones of each other. We're a combination of two sets of DNA which fall into, you know. And the fact is that so many people are actually born without any disability. It's just extraordinary, you know.
That's quite amazing as well. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Radical Australia on Radio 3CR, 8:55 on your AM dial.
Well, we don't do that.
And it's Beth Matthews. You're speaking with Dr. Joe Toscano.
Beth, we don't do that.
Well, I just did.
Well, we don't. We don't.
I'm trying to make your program a bit more professional, Joe, and give you a few tips.
Me.
You know, I've been around a while.
Henrietta, she's just been mean to you. I mean, I've told you before, I just do the talking. Henrietta does everything else that's important, and you've just disrespected her. You're lucky she hasn't turned off your microphone.
Well, maybe she has. I wouldn't know because
she's
around
turn
this
off
side
mine.
Of the panel.
This is not very radical. So why'd you come to 3CR 13 years ago?
You made me, Joe. Hang on.
I made you come to 3CR.
You made me because
When did I first meet you?
I joined a long time ago. I was in the Wednesday Action Group. Mm. I was going to protests I remember there was one and it was on May Day. And you said to me, you were there with your very old mobile phone. Oh, it's the same one you've got. Yeah,
that's right.
Old mobile phone.
That's
and
right.
And you said to me.
Yeah, see here.
Yeah, that same one. Yeah. And you said to me, they want a live interview in 60 seconds. Here you go, Beth.
Yep.
And find a quiet corner. So I had to press myself up against a building and I could just barely hear them say, so what's happening at May Day? And I just blurted out and spoke. And then after that, I think there was another protest about no McDonald's in Tacoma.
That's right.
That was happening. Mm. And yet again, you said, there you go, Beth, you know, you're live on air. I thought, okay. So I had to come to the party. And then when we were running together in the
I've never run with you on the footpath.
We were a couple of independents running together, and I came in to actually be on the Anarchist
World,
which was quite a thrill because I'd been listening to it for a couple of years, and the next thing, you're on there, and you wouldn't believe this, listeners. I was. I was sitting here in the studio, as nervous as anything, and Dale was doing the panelling. And the next thing, Joe's pager, back in the days when there were pagers, the pager goes beep, beep, beep. Joe looks at his pager and says, oh, the medical emergency, I've got to take this. And out he goes and slams the door. I'm in here by myself. And yeah. I thought, well, the show must go on.
That's right.
So by the time he came back in, I thought, oh, no, that's okay. I've got this under control.
Well, look, it's called grooming. We were grooming you for bigger and better things because it was obvious that you had the ability to put across ideas and in a very positive way.
Well, I actually very much appreciate – now, I don't mean to get smalsy. No. But I actually very much appreciate that, Joe, that you saw that in me and you pushed – gave me a little bit of a push.
Mm.
So it was really, yeah, been very helpful.
Yeah.
I can't imagine my life without 3CR.
Really?
Well, it's sort of been such a big part of, right. You know, the last decade, really. And, you know, so many different experiences. And I especially encourage anybody listening who thinks that they might have some talent.
Or even if you haven't got any talent.
Talent, yeah.
We're happy to have you.
I was going to say, like Henrietta, you could just come in and be very silent and do the panelling. Yeah. There's an opportunity for everybody.
Yeah, there is. You can go to the front desk, you can be interviewed, and you can do all. There's always room on the breakfast show.
Oh, my God, there is, yes.
Now, tell us how this radical philosophy business started, the program here on 3CR.
Well, it was when I was doing the breakfast program, I put in an application to the committee to have my own program, and it was really good because here at 3CR, you're not frowned upon if you're not an academic, and I didn't even mention the fact that I had a philosophy degree, and it didn't matter to anybody. That, you know, and I just said how much, you know, I was so passionate about philosophy. And I spoke quite a bit and I said that preference would be given to women philosophers because because people just don't seem to recognise women philosophers. And one of the staff members here, I said to her that I'd actually surveyed quite a few people and I've said to them, can you name a philosopher? And they'd say yes. And they'd name, I don't know, Peter Singer or Socrates. And I'd say, good, can you name a woman philosopher? None of them could.
Mm.
And I could see her eyes sort of darting back and forth. Can you name a woman philosopher, Henrietta? Sappho!
Sappho!
There you are!
Yeah. We got her speaking. You got her speaking. Very good. Now she's been identified. They'll be after her. She's got a checkered past, that Henrietta.
Oh, she has.
Well. Very checkered. Very, very checkered. Very, very, very checkered.
And she's very intelligent. There you go. I didn't survey you, Henrietta.
Do you think I would have producers who don't pass the intelligence test? I know I've got you, but, you know, that was a mistake. Didn't the Anarchism Institute we second you? We kind of said to the committee, this is a good idea? Because we were affiliates. We were the affiliates that pushed you.
Yeah,
forward.
You were actually. Yeah, now that I'm thinking back, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did. You did say you'd vouch for me.
Yeah, you vouched for you. You're a reasonable human being. That's right.
And it was quite good. They insisted on having a backup person.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked a friend here, Margaret, if she could be the backup person. I have been told by the staff that, you know, we're probably up against you. I'm one of the most reliable people here.
Mm.
You know, if I can't make it in, I'll give them plenty of notice.
Yep.
I'll always have another program sort of
That's
on
right.
backup. And I've never let anybody down, you know, in all this time.
Well, that's right. People don't realise that it is hard work.
It is. Well, it started off being weekly and now I've actually, you know, with my retirement and travelling, 3CR have been so accommodating because I've gone monthly. And I don't have to come in to do a live program. So I can actually load up half a dozen programs and then travel for 6 months. So, I mean, they've been incredibly accommodating for me.
Mm. So when's it on these days?
It's on the first – well, it's on very soon, the first Wednesday of the month between 6 and 6.30. But, look, Joe, who listens to live radio anymore? You've got to get with a program. Everybody's on podcasts now.
Are they? So, all right.
So just Radical Philosophy Podcast.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there is one or two listeners listen to you live. Although you're not live, you're pre-recorded. Yeah. Not like this interview. We only do live.
Yes.
Yeah. Talk Back with Attitude, live. Radical Australia, live. Anarchist World This Week, live.
It's much easier. You don't have to worry about the editing.
Exactly. We don't do editing.
But look, while we're actually singing 3CR's praises, mm-hmm. I wanted to say how incredibly helpful and marvellous Michaela has been mm-hmm. for all these years. If I've got a problem, I just, you know, message her. She gets straight back to me. She sorts everything out. She has been amazing.
Well, that's good.
You know, so hopefully she'll be here for another 10 years.
Really?
Hopefully I'll be here for another 10
years. Well, that's the problem. Not her. She's much younger. You've been here. And I don't think I'll be here for another 10 years. Now, can you tell us some of the more interesting women philosophers you've interviewed? I know they're all interesting, but those that are exceptionally interesting that you've interviewed, and are they available on, are they still on podcast that people can listen to?
They're all available. I've done about 260 interviews now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a...
What, there's 260 women philosophers in the world?
Oh, there's a lot more than that, actually. Yeah. I did worry at first. I thought, right. Oh, what am I going to do? But when I run out. But look, there's
well, women... weren't you up for some major award outside?
Oh,
the
I have, road? Yes. Oh, I forgot about that.
Well, tell us about it.
Slipped my mind. Yes, yeah. I won an award through the Australasian Association of Philosophy.
Yeah.
And that was up there with the Philosopher's Zone.
Right, on the ABC.
Yes, and the ABC.
Yeah, but there's too many of them, and it's not as long as your program.
No, it's actually true, yeah. They're very different, actually. They're very different programs, really. I mean, people think, oh, philosophy, it's all the same, but I sort of take a different approach. But I did get a compliment once. Well, I think it was a compliment.
Once, you got one compliment.
I got out of all my many compliments, a fellow came up to me at a 3CR thing, yeah. And he said to me, your program is just as good as the Philosopher's Zone without all the bells and whistles. And I thought, look, you could have dropped that. The
bells and whistles. So, interesting women philosophers you've chatted with who you'd suggest people listen to the podcast.
Well, there has been there's been a few that have like very female orientated program, and one was actually on miscarriage and fetal death,
right?
Which was really quite difficult to do, because I knew this philosopher had been through lived experience of this. So I found that quite hard going. But there's certain things that are off limits that people just don't talk about, and that's one of them. And when you think about it, like after I actually did that interview with her, somebody who was in 3CR saw me and said, you know, that they had a partner for a few years, and they found out, you know, many years later that their female partner had actually had an abortion and never consulted them.
Mm.
And it sort of fell into that category. And I thought, geez. And then another relative actually said to me, he said, because they had three children, he said, look, I don't know if you know this, but we lost a baby.
Mm.
And he said, when I heard your interview, you know, and I had no idea. Known them for many years, and they had never mentioned it. So I think that it's really important to discuss certain topics that we sort of, well, we don't speak about them. And I think, how does it make people feel when you've gone through that and you've lost a child and no one wants to talk to you about it, you know, and you've, you know, that thing, a problem shared is a problem halved?
Mm. I hate to be rude.
Well, you do it frequently.
I know. But what's the philosophical basis of that particular discussion?
Well, look, I like to stretch the boundaries of philosophy.
Right.
And, I mean, she actually had done, you know, professional academic work.
Right.
But not all my interviews are done by academics. I sort of mix it up quite mm-hmm. a bit.
Right.
And one woman that comes to mind My friend Sue actually heard her on the radio speaking about op shops and how passionate she was about recycling and reusing things rather than buying new things and supporting the capitalist society.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I got a message to her and she was terribly shy about coming on because she probably looked at the last few programs I did and they were all professor or doctor.
Yep.
And I said, look, it'll be a really good interview, capitalism and op shops.
Yep.
So she said, okay. Oh, and she was one of the best speakers. And I think that's another thing too with my program. A lot of women, especially a woman I interviewed just three or four interviews ago and about women's clothing, she said she was quite nervous and she said, look, I've only ever done a 10-minute interview. And I said, that's okay. I said, it's only like about 20, 25 minutes, you know, sort of shorten it. And I had lots of questions written down. Well, we got in here. She did a two-part interview. She spoke for 50 minutes, you know, and I think it's really important that women sort of have that confidence because I've heard some horror stories with the ABC. They'll basically lock someone in a studio by themselves and shout out, start speaking now, stop speaking now. And then the next thing they listen back and they're not on the interview at all.
Well, that's what Henrietta does. She must have worked at the ABC at some stage.
But it is really important. And, I mean, what I do as well, because, you know, as I was saying, I get lots of compliments and I have had people say to me, you really seem to have built up a sense of rapport with your interviewees. And I say, yeah, you know, I never just say, okay, let's go. I have a bit of a chat to them first and, you know, tell a few of my funny jokes and get them laughing.
Funny jokes.
And, you know, build up a little bit of rapport, ask them about themselves and get them relaxed before the interview.
Just give them a Valium.
And always looking at the medical side of things, But, yeah, I think that's just really important. And another woman, Sophia, who's I think she's involved with the Legalised Marijuana Party. And look, I just absolutely had I saw her and the topic came up and I grabbed her for the interview. And by the time a week passed, all of a sudden she was big news because she was getting lots of votes and her party was being voted in.
Right.
And I thought, oh, I got a real scoop here.
Right.
So, but when I spoke to her, I did the interview and then she asked me for tips. She said, look, you know, I've got a live interview on the radio. And I said, well, look, not everybody's going to be on your side like I am. And, you know, I said, just pause a little bit before you answer. And I just sort of gave her a couple of general tips and she was really appreciative for that. And then she sent me a message back afterwards and said, I've done quite a few interviews now and I've got to say that, you know, yours was the best. You made me feel so relaxed. I'm really proud of that. I think, you know.
Well, you know, my mother used to say, there's nothing like self-praise.
No, there certainly isn't a bit of self-promotion like you, Joe. I've got a T-shirt here with your...
Yeah, well, I'm not going to tell them what size it is, but I kept that for you. So I'm concerned about the state of Australian society currently, and I'm sure a lot of people who listen to this program are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we go wrong? I mean, people like you and me and Henrietta, we've been involved in these struggles for decades. And do you think we've got too much identity politics? Do you think we've turned away from the issues which matter to people? Where do you think we've gone wrong? Because we have no influence, minimal influence on what's happening in society today.
Well, I'm gonna quote a friend of mine and I'm going to some of her last words. And she said, the whole world's gone to shite.
Shite.
Well, I can't swear because Henrietta would have to jump on the dump button there.
No, you
can. Do you know where that is? Yeah.
You can use that word.
Yeah. Well, I was just very, I didn't want to be put
this,
off
this,
there.
This is your best friend who's recently died.
My best friend, and I did want to give her a mention because you know, after me saying, you know, I stand so low on my program.
Yep.
Well, I don't, because, I mean, I've had you get me the program, always give me encouragement, and my one of my closest friends, Sue Lee, well, I was on the breakfast program with. She has been supportive right up to the end,
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying to get the – she used to send me suggestions of interviews,
right.
and the last one was on kangaroo dogs, the kangaroo. Philosophy of kangaroo dogs. Very interesting. She'd hear an interesting interview somewhere and she'd say, yeah. you know, get in touch with this one and that one, and she's been so supportive over the years. And on the 14th of last month – now, I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Yep.
She was 85 years old and she suicided.
Right.
You can call it whatever you like, yeah. voluntary euthanasia, but she suicided. And now I did want to say to listeners out there, I'm a joint executor of her estate. Because she suicided, all of her paperwork and electronic equipment went to the coroner's office and we couldn't retrieve that for 10 days. We didn't know whether she'd left letters to her daughters. We were really up in the air about everything and we couldn't access the will. So, look, if you're listening out there, get a piece of paper, write out a will right now and get a copy, make a copy and give it to a friend so that somebody else has a copy of the will. Because if you don't do that, you're really leaving a hell of a mess. And the other thing is, you know, there's been many, many tears shed over losing Sue. And I suppose the thing is just be a good friend to your close friends because you never know when they could go.
Well, you never know what's around the corner.
Look, no.
I mean, I'm involved with people with severe physical disability, post-trauma. 1 minute, they got a future. I'm not saying they haven't got a future after. But within a few seconds, everything dramatically changes. I don't know if you ever met Harvey Buttonshaw. I think he was before your time.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he was an old anarchist who fought in the Spanish Civil War. He used to live rough down at Lavers Hill. And he went through all these experiences. And I said to him, what's the secret? Why did you survive? And he said, luck, dumb luck. And that's what life is in many regards. Like I took a shortcut yesterday at a park. Shouldn't have taken the shortcut. I should have walked the 5 metres. I tripped over a branch and nearly broke my hip.
Oh.
Luck, dumb luck. Have you got any parting words for in case we've got somebody under 50 listening to the program?
Oh, gee, the youth. yeah, well, look, just do your best and be happy and support your friends.
Right.
That's just about my parting words because, yeah, you don't never know what's around the corner. And, yeah, just try and be as happy as you can. What's that old saying? Cry and you cry alone.
Yeah.
Laugh and the whole world laughs with you.
Yeah. Well, they've been laughing with you this afternoon.
Yes.
Now, I'd like you, I know when we first interviewed you, or we chatted, we don't do interviews, we do chats, that you were so self-absorbed that you actually taped it because we didn't do podcasts in those days. So could we have a copy? And I'm going to get Henrietta, if she's agreeable, to podcast it with this particular interview because I want to show people the difference in how you have developed over the last decade.
Yeah, no, great. Yep, I'll do that. Yeah. I think it's on a CD disc.
CD.
Do we still have CDs here?
Yes, yes.
Really? Yeah, we do. We've got the reel-to-reel, I noticed.
Yeah, so, we do have the reel-to-reel.
I think I've got a photo in front of the reel-to-reel.
Yeah, I don't think it hasn't been used for 25 years. Look, I it's been a pleasure talking to you. It's been a pleasure being your friend over the last three decades. I'm very pleased you've made so much of your life. At the end of the day, we do what we can with what we've got. And for all those people who are keyboard warriors or armchair critics, tear up your membership card to the Gunner Club and the Somebody Should Do Something About That Club and get involved in things, even if it's just a simple volunteer at Community Radio 3CR.
Yeah, thanks very much, Joe.
Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Henrietta. Oh, Henrietta's given us another minute. Now she's telling us to wind up. This program...
She's giving us the finger now.
Yeah, not the middle one. This program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au/Radical Australia. And if you find the chat with Beth boring, there's another 400 podcasts you can access on Radical Australia. Thank you, Henrietta. Thank you, Beth. Thank you, 3CR. Thank you, that listener hiding somewhere under a desk.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.